And the 2025 Nobel Peace Prize goes to Donald J. Trump. Wait, what? Maria Corina Machado, the opposition leader in Venezuela, who is set to take over when the U.S.-backed CIA-led coup d'etat there goes ahead as planned? Why does it seem that the Nobel Committee, far from celebrating a noble warrior for peace, is in fact rewarding a warmonger with their annual peace prize? Let's find out. Brock, hit the theme.
You're listening to The Corbett Report.
Hello?
Hello.
Yes?
Yes. Hello? Am I talking to Maria Corina Machado?
Yes, this is Maria Corina.
Yes, Maria Corina. My name is Christian Bergarp-Viken. I am the secretary of the Norwegian Nobel Committee in Oslo. And I'm calling to inform you that in a few minutes it shall be announced here at the Nobel Institute that you will be awarded the Nobel Peace Prize for 2025.
Oh, oh my God.
So warmest congratulations to you, Maria.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Well, I have no words. Thank you so much, but I hope you understand this is this is a movement. This is an achievement of a whole society. I am just, one person. I certainly do not deserve this. Oh, my God.
I think both the movement and you deserve it.
Welcome back to the Corbett Report, friends. I am James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, coming to you, as always, from the sunny climes of Western Japan here in October of 2025, with episode 484 of the Corbett Report podcast, The Nobel War Prize Strikes Again. And yes, that, as we have just witnessed, is the touching moment in which the head of the Nobel Prize Committee called the recipient of the 2025 Nobel Peace Prize, Maria Corina Machado, to congratulate her on her amazing work and to award her the Nobel Peace Prize. And, oh, how touching, how wonderful. Oh, she's on the verge of tears, overwhelmed by the emotion, and in her unscripted reaction, she immediately deflects. Oh, it's not about, it's not, this, I don't deserve this. This is a movement. The people of Venezuela deserve this prize. Wow, how humble and how touching. And I suppose if you are the type of person who pays no attention whatsoever to Venezuelan politics or the greater imperial project in Latin America, perhaps you would be forgiven for thinking that this is just a brave and noble warrior for democracy against a brutal dictatorship. And there we go. That's why she won the Nobel Peace Prize. Well, let's examine that. Let's interrogate that narrative and find out if it's true. And in order to do that, why don't we start by actually examining the narrative itself? And in order to do that, we can go to NobelPrize.org for the official announcement of the Nobel Peace Prize 2025, which dropped on the 10th of October. And reads thus: The Nobel Peace Prize for 2025 goes to a brave and committed champion of peace, to a woman who keeps the flame of democracy burning amid a growing darkness. Blah, 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 Maria Corina Machado. She is receiving the Nobel Peace Prize for her tireless work promoting democratic rights for the people of Venezuela and for her struggle to achieve a just and peaceful transition from dictatorship to democracy. All right, so far so straightforward. Let's get into the weeds a little bit. As it goes on to say, Venezuela has evolved from a relatively democratic and prosperous country to a brutal authoritarian state that is now suffering a humanitarian and economic crisis. Which, I don't know, to my mind strikes me as A little bit of a political statement there from the Nobel Committee, isn't it? Most Venezuelans live in deep poverty, even as the few at the top enrich themselves. Unlike every other state, of course. The violent machinery of the state is directed against the country's own citizens. Nearly 8 million people have left the country. The opposition has been systematically suppressed by means of election rigging, legal prosecution, and imprisonment. And it goes on to say that as the founder of Sumate, I have no idea how that's pronounced, my apologies in advance, an organization devoted to democratic development, Ms. Machado stood up for free and fair elections more than 20 years ago. As she said, it was a choice of ballots over bullets. All right, again, a pretty straightforward narrative that is developing here. But perhaps the important point here down at the bottom, Maria Corina Machado meets all three criteria stated in Alfred Nobel's will for the selection of a Peace Prize laureate. She has brought her country's opposition together. She has never wavered in resisting the militarization of Venezuelan society. She has been steadfast in her support for a peaceful transition to democracy. So let's find out more about this, because I don't know about you. I'm just a little bit quizzical, a little bit skeptical about some of these claims. Resisting the militarization of Venezuelan society, her support for a peaceful transition to democracy. Maybe there's something more just below the surface here. Maybe we should scratch just a little to try to find it. And if we do, we might alight on this article, for example, from veteran Middle East reporter Eugene Doyle, who wrote, Nobel Peace Laureate calls for U.S. bombing of her country. Oh, the peaceful transition, I tell you. Quote, within hours of being named the Nobel Peace Laureate for 2025, Maria Corina Machado called on President Trump to step up his military and economic campaign against her own country, Venezuela. The curriculum vitae of the opposition leader hardly lines up with what one would typically associate with a peacemaker, nor are those who nominated her, U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio and recent U.S. National Security Advisor Mike Waltz, both drivers of violent policies towards Venezuela. It goes on, Machado is a passionate Zionist and supporter of both the State of Israel and Benjamin Netanyahu personally. She has not been silent on the genocide. Indeed, she has actively called for Israel to press ahead, saying Hamas must be defeated at all costs, whatever form it takes. Oh, what a beautiful, peaceful warrior she is. If Machado achieves power in Venezuela, among her first long-promised acts will be the ending of Venezuela's support for Palestine and the transfer of the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. She is a signatory of a cooperation agreement with Israel's Likud party. Okay, interesting. It goes on to say, Venezuelan activist Michelle Elner wrote in the U.S. progressive outlet Code Pink, she's the smiling face of Washington's regime change machine, the polished spokesperson for sanctions, privatization, and foreign intervention, dressed up as democracy. Machado's politics are steeped in violence. She has called for foreign intervention, even appealing directly to Benjamin Netanyahu, the architect of Gaza's annihilation, to help liberate Venezuela with bombs under the banner of freedom. And this article goes on in some degree of detail, if any were needed. But I think we're starting to get maybe a more accurate picture than that is reflected in the literal pictures which adorn every article about Machado. I'm sure you have seen this if you have seen any of the articles about her, at least her recent notoriety, receiving the Nobel Peace Prize. There are so many pictures of her making the prayer hands or the heart hands or looking beatific and angelic. Oh, how could there be anything wrong with this brave champion of peace in Venezuela? Well, there may be a difference between her outward appearance and what is really going on underneath, because of course this is part of a long and intricate operation that is now really decades in the making of U.S. attempts and foreign intervention in Venezuela, attempts to essentially coup d'etat Venezuela and overthrow the government. And I am tempted to say that this Nobel Peace Prize is paving the way towards warfare in Venezuela, but in fact, actually, as we know, that warfare is already going on. It is not something that's theoretical or in the future. We know, for example, just in recent days, President Trump authorized the CIA to conduct lethal covert action in Venezuela. That is now official and officially admitted. Yes, the CIA is undertaking covert action inside Venezuela, and they do have authorization to conduct lethal operations, presumably up to and including the assassination of Maduro. I suppose we will find out. But at any rate, that has been confirmed by Trump himself, who has talked about the possibility of land warfare in Venezuela now. And we already know that, of course, the warfare is already happening on the seas, as we have seen half a dozen boats now, having alleged drug boats, of course, having been struck by the U.S. military in recent weeks. So we know the warfare is already going on. In order to get a better handle on what's really going on here, the stakes involved in this ongoing intervention against Venezuela, and what the Nobel Peace Prize winner, Machado, might really be about, and what puppet master she might be serving as a serviceable puppet there in Venezuela, I turned to previous Corbett Report guest and someone that I presume much of my audience will already know. That's Daniel McAdams, co-host with Ron Paul of the Ron Paul Liberty Report, who has a thing or two to say about what's going on in Venezuela. Daniel McAdams, why did Maria Corina Machado win the Nobel Peace Prize in 2025?
Because she's been selected to help the U.S. overthrow the Venezuelan government, and she's an extremely willing participant in the impending coup that's actually already underway. She is the tool of the U.S., the deep state, whatever you want to call it, the corporate America, to overtake Venezuela. And there's multiple parts to it. People will say, oh, they just want to grab the oil. Well, that's a part of it. They want to grab the minerals. That's a part of it. But there's also a bigger picture there. And it's related to who lost Latin America. You know, we certainly aren't going to lose Latin America. So that's why we have Javier Milei in Argentina, who's another puppet of the globalist state. He's cosplaying as a libertarian, but he's not a libertarian. And you have someone like her. Now, she is, if you remember Juan Guaido, it was almost a comical figure when they tried to put Juan Guaido into power. She's no Juan Guaido. She's much more ruthless than that. And she will get the job done, given the chance. And it looks like she's been given the chance.
So what does this peace prize mean for the possible path to war between the U.S. and Venezuela? Or is the U.S. already at war with Venezuela, given apparently Trump's sending in of the CIA to conduct covert operations there?
Yeah, the peace plan is the peace prize is an absolute green light for war, and we already are in the war. And the thing is, as with all the neocon stuff, James, and I don't want to overdo the similarities, but they tend to follow a certain pattern. We're seeing that pattern with Venezuela. If you look at it this way, think of the narco terrorists in their boats as Saddam's WMDs. That's the justification for the war, you know. And then you have the you had a finding against Iraq, and you have a finding now with the CIA in Venezuela. You have the go ahead from the U.S. military. You have the sanctions, which have destroyed the country, completely gutted the country from within. We remember the Madeleine Albright, it was worth it to kill all those kids in Iraq. It's the same thing in Venezuela. People are starving in Venezuela. We're actually creating the problems that we are saying, pretending that we want to solve. It's U.S. sanctions since 2017, a tightened, I should say, since 2017 on Venezuela, that have caused a migration in the first place. People are desperate, and they're migrating, you're voting with their feet, they're trying to get out of there because the U.S. has destroyed the country so much. And so there'll be nothing left now except for the regime change war, which is already underway. You have extrajudicial killings of people on the high seas who haven't been even, certainly not even accused of anything, just the president says it. So we are in a war. It's a regime change war. It's very, very much like Iraq, and my guess is it'll end up like Iraq.
So is this just a Guaido 2.0? What are we looking at here?
No, I don't think so at all. I think Guaido, as I said earlier, is more of a comical figure. He was a figure of derision, picked by John Bolton, perhaps, or someone like him. I forget the person who was working on it at the time. But no, he was more of a comical figure. She is not. Now, if you watch her in interviews, she is as serious as a heart attack. She is a hardcore. She's more hardcore than even the semi-comical Milei in Argentina. She's been on, and she's going all the right places. She's going to Donald Trump Jr. and saying, "Hey, if you can get me in power, you guys have carte blanche. You have everything you want, all the oil, all the minerals. We're going to privatize everything." Of course, we understand that privatization in a situation like this is not how an average American would understand it. Private property is good, but what it is a takeover of assets for the by the politically connected to enrich themselves, and the impoverished remain impoverished, probably even worse so. But she's absolutely on board. She's also on board with U.S. foreign policy as well. She's written love letters to Netanyahu. She has vowed the first thing she'll do is move the capital to Jerusalem, which is what Trump did. She's even wrote a letter to Netanyahu asking him to help her overthrow her government. You know, she is literally at war with her own country, yet she gets a peace prize for it. It's the most astonishing. Dr. Paul wrote a column a few weeks ago. He called it the Nobel War is Peace Prize, which is exactly what it is.
That's the always informative Daniel McAdams, co-host of the Ron Paul Liberty Report. And if you are not yet, I hope you will now be following the Ron Paul Liberty Report, obviously their Rumble channel, but the Ron Paul Institute generally at ronpaulinstitute.org. But I suppose we've reached the point of the exploration at which there may be some people in the audience, if they happen to be completely unfamiliar with history and completely trusting of globalist institutions, in which case, how did you find the Corbett Report at all? But if you are in that boat, you might be wondering, how is it that the Nobel Peace Prize Committee is so avowedly and unabashedly political and taking a very political position in an ongoing military intervention that is actually happening right now that will only exacerbate that military intervention? How can the Nobel Peace Prize be used for the forwarding of a war agenda? And if that is your question, then you have a lot of catching up to do. But luckily, I have the resources to help you do that. Specifically, you might recall that back in 2011-2012, I had a short-lived radio program called Corbett Report Radio. And in episode 242 of that radio program, back in 2012, on the occasion of the awarding of the laughably named Nobel Peace Prize to the EU for its efforts in promoting freedom and human rights and democracy and sunshine and puppies and rainbows. On that occasion in which they were awarded the Nobel Peace Prize, I took the opportunity to go through a little bit of history about the Ig Nobel War Prize. The more that you get into it, the more you find that, in fact, the committee has consistently awarded people who do not deserve this prize in any way, shape, or form. And it really does make you scratch your head and wonder what it's all about. So let's turn to another article that's posted up on globalresearch.ca right now. This is an article by Michael Parenti. It's called The Nobel Peace Prize for War. And he goes on to talk about some of these controversial candidates in the past. So let's just read through a few of these entries from his article. For example, he says, "Let's start back in 1931 with an improbable Nobel winner. Nicholas Murray Butler, president of Columbia University. During World War I, Butler explicitly forbade all faculty from criticizing the Allied war against the Central Powers. He equated anti-war sentiments with sedition and treason. He also claimed that an educated proletariat is a constant source of disturbance and danger to any nation. In the 1920s, Butler became an outspoken supporter of Italy's fascist dictator Benito Mussolini. Some years later, he became an admirer of heavily militarized Nazi Germany. In 1933, 2 years after receiving the Nobel Prize, Butler invited the German ambassador to the U.S. to speak at Columbia in defense of Hitler. He rejected student appeals to cancel the invitation, claiming it would violate academic freedom." Jump ahead to 1973, the year one of the most notorious war criminals, Henry Kissinger, received the Nobel Peace Prize. For the better part of a decade, Kissinger served as an assistant to the President for National Security Affairs and as U.S. Secretary of State, presiding over the seemingly endless bloodletting in Indochina and ruthless U.S. interventions in Central America and elsewhere. From carpet bombing to death squads, Kissinger was there beating down on those who dared resist U.S. power. In his writings and pronouncements, Kissinger continually talked about maintaining U.S. military and political influence throughout the world. If anyone fails to fit Alfred Nobel's description of a prize winner, it would be Henry Kissinger. In 1975, we come to Nobel winner Andrei Sakharov, a darling of the U.S. press, a Soviet dissident who regularly sang praises to corporate capitalism. Sakharov lambasted the U.S. peace movement for its opposition to the Vietnam War. He accused the Soviets of being the sole culprits behind the arms race, and he supported every U.S. armed intervention abroad as a defense of democracy. Hailed in the West as a human rights advocate, Sakharov never had an unkind word for the horrific human rights violations perpetrated by the fascist regimes of faithful U.S. client states, including Pinochet's Chile and Suharto's Indonesia, and he aimed snide remarks at the peaceniks who did. He regularly attacked those in the West who opposed U.S. repressive military interventions abroad. And, of course, let's skip down to the one that we all remember. In 2009, in a fit of self-parody, the folks in Oslo gave the Nobel Peace Prize to President Barack Obama while he produced record military budgets and presided over three or four wars and a number of other attack operations, followed a couple of years later by additional wars in Yemen, West Pakistan, Libya, and Syria, with Iran pending. Nobel winner Obama also proudly hunted down and murdered Osama bin Laden, having accused him, without a shred of evidence, of masterminding the 9/11 attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. You could see that Obama was somewhat surprised and maybe even embarrassed by the award. Here was this young drone commander trying to show what a tough guy warrior he was, saluting the flag-draped coffins one day and attacking other places and peoples the next. Acts of violence in support of the New World Order, certainly every bit worthy of a Nobel Peace Medal. Okay, we'll end the quote there. There are many other examples of ridiculous Nobel Peace Prizes besides, and of course one that Michael Parenti won't talk about, coming sconcely from the from his ensconced position, I should say, in the left side of the phony left-right paradigm. He won't talk about the ridiculousness of the 2007 awarding to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, that disgraced arm of the UN, which has been found to be relying on doctored, fudged, and otherwise manipulated results to come up with its policy, its guidelines for policymakers, talking about the imminent impending threat of climate change and how basically the governments of the world will have to inflict bold new taxes on the on populations in order to combat this problem. So a cry that's already been taken up by the Australian government, and to much to the detriment of the Australian people. So that in itself was another scandal, but there are too many of these to list of ridiculous recipients of this so-called Nobel Peace Prize. Once again, that was a clip from episode 242 of Corbett Report Radio, The Ignoble War Prize, and I suggest you go back and familiarize or re-familiarize yourself with that particular episode, because I have a little fun with the concept towards the end of the episode and decide, hey, if they're going to be a Nobel War Prize, let's go all out and just start awarding this war prize to actual avowed warmongers and unconvicted war criminals. So who could we add to the list? And I propose some suggestions. So I think that's a fun exercise for people who are informed about the reality underlying this Nobel Peace Prize. Ah, yes, Machado has now joined the ranks of unconvicted war criminal Henry Kissinger and unconvicted war criminal Barack Obama and other such prestigious unconvicted war criminals in her reception of the Nobel Peace Prize. Prestigious company indeed, right? Now, having said all of this, of course, I would hope I would not have to make this proviso, but I will anyway. We should be careful not to fall into the trap of simply saying that Machado bad, therefore Maduro good, or some simplistic binary like that, where we can be made to actually root for the Venezuelan government. Yay, yay, guys. The Venezuelan government is awesome, just because they are opposed by the U.S. deep state and Machado and characters like this. No, surely the way that the Venezuelan government is being undermined, overthrown, and the Venezuelan people, of course, are suffering is a travesty and a tragedy, and it should be averted rather than awarded. But having said that, that does not mean that Maduro is some wonderful saint raining down manna from heaven, if only he could. There are certainly problems that exist in Venezuela, and far be it from me, some Canadian in Japan who has never set foot on Venezuelan soil, to tell the Venezuelan people what they should or shouldn't be doing with their country, but that is precisely the point. no foreign power, with foreign intervention, with foreign military intervention, and or CIA intelligence covert operations should be actively trying to steer the course of Venezuelan politics. That is for the Venezuelan people to do, and certainly without the assist by the Nobel Peace Prize Committee to bolster certain people's political credentials. Also, it should be noted that, yes, there certainly are problems in Venezuela. There are people trying to flee. There is an economy in tatters. But at least some of that problem has been created and exacerbated by the ongoing sanctions and warfare that have been taking place against Venezuela, overt and covert, for at least 2.5 decades now. So I would say that that probably plays into it, don't you think? So people who are actually interested in the well-being of the Venezuelan people, I think, should be opposed to the phony opposition of the Machados and what have you, the people who are literally calling for Venezuela to be bombed, and more on the side of the people who are genuinely fighting for human freedom in Venezuela. That being said, those who are interested in that decades-long assault on Venezuela that has been taking place now might be interested in my previous conversation with Daniel McAdams from back in 2019, Daniel McAdams on Trump's Venezuela coup. That will, of course, be linked up in the show notes, along with absolutely everything else that we've been talking about today, so that you can go and really delve into this material. There's obviously a lot more to be found when you start delving into the depths of the Nobel War Prize. But I think we might leave this particular exploration here today. Don't worry, I'm sure we will be following up on the step-by-step, blow-by-blow of whatever covert and overt operations are taking place in Venezuela in upcoming editions of New World next week, so stay tuned for that. And in the meantime, familiarize yourself with the show notes from today's episode. That's going to do it for today. I hope you enjoyed this exploration. Thank you for taking your time to take a look at this information. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and I'll be back in the near future. Insane. Deranged. Crazy. The idea that would-be rulers would cynically use the lunatic cudgel against their political enemies is bad enough. But what if the reality is the complete opposite of what is commonly understood? What if the delusions of the dissidents are in fact real? What if their inability to fit in is not a sign that they are sick, but the society they are protesting against is sick? In Descent into Madness, you will learn about the dark history and the disturbing present of political psychopathy. Descent into Madness. Watch the documentary for free at CorbettReport.com/madness, or continue your education with the free psychology course at opensourceeducation.online.